bureaucratic processes to approve new settlements, basically. And so what's happening right now is these really violent settlers are going out into the fields. They're stealing land from Palestinians, attacking people. Every once in a while, the Israeli government will condemn them. But then what happens is they turn around and they retroactively legalize the land that was stolen and basically reward the violent settlers by giving them the state of the stamp of state legitimacy. And then, you know, within weeks, months, years, you have a new settlement right there where the violent settlers had, you know, gone out and stolen the land.
We're going to do part two of this conversation and post it online at democracynow.org, where I'm going to ask you about Mohammed Ibrahim, the Palestinian-American teenager released from an Israeli military prison in late November after more than 9 months in custody without trial. Palestinian-American, you've just come from Florida, where you spent time with him. Jasper Nathaniel, New York-based writer and reporter who covers Israel's occupation of the West Bank on his Substack called Infinite Jazz. And we'll talk about your new piece, Israel's Archaeological Apartheid. That does it for our show. A happy birthday to Yusra Rizuki. We have job openings at Democracy Now! For video news production and digital fellowship programs, go to democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Ready for another year of grassroots community radio? With your support, it's possible. Go to kbu.fm/give or mail a check to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214 to contribute to KBU's $75,000 goal for our KBU Fights Back campaign, going on now until December 31st. What better way to celebrate than by gifting your loved one a KBU membership this season?
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBU Evening News.
Coming up on this end-of-year membership drive special of the KBU Evening News, meteorologists predict a windstorm for Christmas Eve.
Oregonians in 19 counties can apply for replacement SNAP benefits if they lost food in last week's power outages.
And in national news, a federal judge continues to prevent officials from rearresting Kilmar Abrego Garcia.
Good evening. This is the KBU Evening News for Thursday, December 23rd, 2025. KBU is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and we'd like to encourage you to become a member by going online to kbu.fm/give. I'm Anna Wilcox.
And I'm Dave Johnson. A strong winter storm predicted to strike the Portland area on Wednesday is part of a larger weather system affecting the entire West Coast from California to Washington. The intense low-pressure system will intensify as it moves up the coastline on the morning of Christmas Eve. Local electrical utility companies urge customers to prepare for potential power outages as the windstorm approaches. The greatest concern with this approaching storm is the potential for downed trees and power lines. Utility company officials encourage electric customers to never touch a downed power line or anything else the line is touching, and to always assume power lines are live and stay at least 50 feet away. Utility officials also encourage customers to prepare an outage kit that includes flashlights and headlamps, a battery-operated hand crank radio, a car charger for cell phones, laptops, or tablets, a 72-hour supply of ready-to-eat food and water, any required medications, extra blankets, and bottled water for both people and animals. Unlike last week's weather event, meteorologists are tracking a stronger storm that could bring sustained winds of 20 to 45 miles per hour, with stronger gusts reaching up to 65 miles per hour in the Portland metro area. People are encouraged to prepare by securing holiday decorations as well. Additionally, drivers should be prepared for possible hazardous driving conditions as scattered loose debris may fall onto the roadway. To report a power outage, you can call PGE's outage hotline at 1-800-544-1795 or Pacific Power's outage hotline at 877-508-5088.
Oregonians who may have lost food they bought with Supplemental Nutrition Assistant Program, or SNAP, benefits during a power outage earlier this month have extra time to apply for replacement benefits. Power outages on December 17th across 19 counties, including all five Portland metro counties, may have resulted in lost or spoiled food. The Oregon Department of Human Services says people have until January 16th to request replacement benefits. People who use SNAP can request replacement benefits by visiting their local Human Services office, logging on to their one online account, or by calling 800-699-9075. One in five Oregonians uses SNAP to help pay for the cost of food. That includes many children, elders, and people with disabilities.
In the state of Mississippi, 83% of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE arrests, happened in local jails, according to an analysis from the Prison Policy Initiative. Sheriffs and police are often helping drive immigration arrests, even in counties that do not have formal agreements with ICE. That's not the case in a state like Oregon, where sanctuary laws prevent local and state law enforcement from collaborating with ICE. Mark Richardson reports.
Stories of federal agents detaining undocumented migrants off the street get a lot of headlines lately, and a new report shows the majority of ICE arrests in states like Mississippi take place in local and state jails. ICE and other agencies like the U.S. Marshals Service often work together through agreements, both legal and financial, for local officers to notify ICE of possible undocumented immigrants. Wandra Bertram with the nonprofit Prison Policy Initiative says the problem is growing.
Over the last several months, a trend that we began to notice, and it has continued, is that the single largest source of arrests, of ICE arrests in this country, are local jails.
Earlier this month, the Prison Policy Initiative issued a report examining how jails continue to facilitate mass deportation and also identifying opportunities for resistance at the state and local levels. Bertram says that nationwide, about half of all ICE arrests happen out of local jails and other lockups. But she adds that statistics provided by ICE show that red states in the Deep South have some of the highest arrest rates.
The largest share of ICE arrests happening in jails are largely states in the South. Mississippi, 83% of ICE arrests happening in jails. Alabama, 76%. South Carolina, 80%.
Bertram says that in the face of public opposition to the wave of immigration detentions, many counties and states are opting out of agreements to work with federal authorities in their jails.
Many police departments have been choosing to not cooperate with ICE in the way that they used to, and many states have passed guidance that say jails can no longer enter agreements. In some states, they've even gone further and said jails can't cooperate with ICE at all.
For Mississippi News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson.
New battleships to be named after President Donald Trump. The Trump administration halts offshore wind developments again, and a federal judge continues the order preventing immigration officials from rearresting Gilmar Abrego Garcia. With that story and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The future Trump-class battleship, the USS Defiant, will be the largest, deadliest, most versatile, and best-looking warship anywhere on the world's oceans.
Navy Secretary John Phelan supports what he calls a golden fleet of warships named for President Donald Trump. It comes as the Navy scrapped plans for a smaller, more agile warship due to growing costs and delays. Government Accountability Office reports show the new Trump-class fleet could face similar challenges as the shipbuilding industry is in a constant state of triage. The U.S. is pursuing a third oil tanker as tensions with Venezuela grow after several months of the U.S. bombing alleged drug boats sailing from Venezuela. Some White House officials say it's part of attempts to oust Venezuelan leader Nicolas Maduro, who has held onto power despite losing a 2024 election. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says the status quo between the U.S. and Venezuela wasn't working.
The status quo, that they operate and cooperate with terrorist organizations against the national interests of the United States. Not just cooperate, but partner with and participate in activities that threaten the national interests of the United States. So yes, our goal is to change that dynamic.
The administration also cites national security concerns concerns as it moves to halt construction on 5 offshore wind developments. It's the second attempt this year to pause these wind projects. The first was blocked by federal courts. Offshore wind backers point out the projects were already vetted by the Defense Department in the permitting process. Connecticut Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal calls the decision reckless.
In the midst of the coldest months of the year, when electricity prices are rising, the administration is making power even more costly. It is putting thousands of people out of jobs during the holiday season, and it is without any real explanation.
Connecticut's Revolution Wind was cited directly for the pause, though it's slated to begin operating next year. State Attorney General William Tong says legal options are being considered to keep the project on track. A federal judge has extended an order into next month preventing Kilmar Abrego Garcia from being rearrested by immigration officials. The Maryland man was illegally deported to a maximum security prison in his home country of El Salvador. Abrego Garcia has said he's willing to self-deport to Costa Rica as long as the U.S. drops its criminal case against him. His attorney, Simon Sandoval Moschenberg, says the federal government is keeping Abrego Garcia in the U.S.
They say this in all their immigration cases where an immigrant is challenging detention. They say, well, if you don't want to be detained, just deport yourself. But for them to say that in this case, where that's actually what he's trying to do, was quite bitterly ironic.
New reports show in some states, most immigration arrests occur in local and state jails. ICE and other agencies like the U.S. Marshals Service often work together through legal or financial agreements for local officers to notify ICE of possible undocumented immigrants. The report finds about half of all ICE arrests happen out of local jails and other lockups. Wanda Bertram with the Prison Policy Initiative says red states in the Deep South have some of the highest ICE arrest rates.
The largest share of ICE arrests happening in jails are largely states in the South. Mississippi, 83% of ICE arrests happening in jails. Alabama, 76%. South Carolina, 80%.
I'm Edwin Javier for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
A hotel in South Dakota must pay out the Native plaintiffs it discriminated against, a federal jury says. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A federal jury has ruled against the Grand Gateway Hotel in Rapid City. With just one exception, Retzel Corporation and the Grand Gateway Hotel were found to have discriminated against Native Americans. South Dakota Public Broadcasting C.J. Keen was in the courtroom.
In total, tens of thousands of dollars of compensatory and punitive damages were awarded to the people denied services at the hotel. Additionally, that discrimination suit means Indian Collective will receive its request of $1 from Retzel. In total, Retzel is now liable for 6 discrimination claims connected to the events of 2022. Regarding the assault claim against Sunny Red Bear, Retzel Corporation was found liable for Connie Urie's assault against her. Urie was also convicted in criminal court for that incident. For Nicholas Urie, the current operator of the Grand Gateway Hotel, his 2 defamation claims against Indian Collective were thrown out by the jury. The final claim regarding an illegal nuisance was found in favor of Urie and the hotel. That nuisance included a light projection displaying a, quote, eviction notice on the side of the hotel and the months-long protests that took place just off of the hotel property. In total, Indian Collective is ordered to pay $812 for that claim. The decision by the jury came after over 9 hours of deliberation and represents the end to the 3-year-long legal battle. For National Native News, I'm C.J. Keene in Rapid City.
Dancing and drumming are essential to Siberian Yupik culture, passed down by ancestors. Josie Ungot and Janessa Nunguk are dancers and high school students in the village of Gamble on St. Lawrence Island in the Bering Sea. They talked to their teacher about what the cultural tradition was like in different generations.
We have Chris Bidu drumming for some students in a classroom in Gamble. He's been teaching this native dance class for over a year now.
Bidu has been a teacher for so long. He's welcoming and kind to all of us students. He says dance was much more strict in the past.
Only dancers to a song was if it's that composer's daughter or wife. Those were the only ones that danced.
He says he probably wouldn't have been a drummer if he had grown up in the old days because his parents weren't drummers. Bidu tells us back then, women would practice dance moves, but if a dancer made a wrong move, the older woman would throw a shoe at them.
They had a big pile of shoes. Once a little wrong move, a woman threw at the girl.
Bitta tells us a sad experience about missionaries coming here last century and seeing what our people couldn't do. That drumming, dancing, hunting, eating walrus, and speaking our language was evil.
It was instilled deep in their heart that this was evil, that drums and church don't mix.
Pitu tells us when the young ministers started working, they realized it wasn't evil and came and apologized. As the years went by, the tradition slowly became less strict. For about 40 years now, everyone started dancing to any song.
High school students Josie and Janessa wrote and produced the story with help from Alaska Public Media health reporter Rachel Cassandra. And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for a reflection on the life of KBOO volunteer and writer Judith Arcana. At 6, it's This Way Out. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with some rain showers and an overnight low of 42. And tomorrow it will be windy and rainy with a high of 50 degrees. Today in history, in 1986, the airplane Voyager lands in California, becoming the first aircraft to fly nonstop around the world without aerial or ground refueling. The quote of the day is from American novelist Norman MacLean, who wrote, quote, "A mystery of the universe is how it has managed to survive with so much volunteer help."
The Multnomah County Library released the list of its most checked out books from the last year. The top spot went to James, a novel by Percival Everett. It's a reimagining of the adventures of Huckleberry Finn, told from the perspective of Jim, the enslaved man traveling down the Mississippi River with him. Second was Tilt, a novel by climate journalist and fiction writer Emma Petit. That book is set in Portland and explores the immediate aftermath of a major earthquake right after the main character has been shopping for a crib at IKEA. The third most checked out book for adults was The God of the Woods by Liz Moore. It's a mystery set at a summer camp in the Adirondack Mountains owned by a wealthy family. For teens, The Hunger Games prequel novel Sunrise on the Reaping by Suzanne Collins, was the most popular. Next is The Blue Line Letters by Stephen Christiansen, a story told through a student's daily letters to his teacher during his commute on the MAX through Portland. Third was Throne of Glass by Sarah J. Maas, a romance fantasy novel from the author known for her Court of Thorns and Roses series. All five of the top circulated children's books were by Mo Willems, including the Thank You Book, Pigs Make Me Sneeze, an Elephant and Piggy Book, and Watch Me Throw the Ball. In the most recent fiscal year, Multnomah County Library reports nearly 9 million checkouts and over 2 million visits over the year.
Surveys of Americans show the holidays can be a time of sadness for many, especially when dealing with the loss of a loved one. Social expectations can weigh on an individual, and obligations to attend parties and act joyful can be especially challenging during the holidays. Politely declining an invitation may be necessary to preserve emotional health. Children who are grieving often express grief differently. Brett Pivoteau has more on the story.
While the holidays are supposed to bring a time of joy, surveys consistently show it's a time of sadness for many, especially when dealing with loss. For those who have lost a loved one, the season can intensify grief rather than soften it. Expectations to feel joyful may deepen isolation, and increasing social obligations during the holidays can feel overwhelming rather than comforting. Zena Regis with Compassion and Choices says invitations to parties and family gatherings can bring an unspoken expectation of cheer at a time when grief has narrowed one's capacity to engage.
It just can be a trigger for our mental health. If we're expected to be doing something and we're not doing it, it can feel like you're falling behind or that something's wrong with you because you are not cheerful, because you're not looking forward to spending time with family.
She says it's important to give yourself permission to say no to large gatherings. The issue of how to decline an invitation can be its own source of stress. People may worry about disappointing others or appearing ungrateful. Regis says it can be helpful to develop scripts around what a polite no could look like, or consider redirecting the invitation.
People can be torn between, I don't feel up for this big social event, but I need to feel connected to other people. I don't want to just isolate. And so to say, I'm not up for your party. Do you want to get coffee? Just one-on-one. That might be a better situation for me.
Experts say children who have suffered loss may experience holiday grief differently, but no less deeply. Holidays can disrupt a child's sense of stability, especially when a missing parent, grandparent, or sibling was central to family rituals. Younger children may repeatedly ask questions about death, while older children may feel pressure to be strong for surviving adults. Kids may struggle to articulate what they are feeling, and Regis says societal expectations for children can be even more pronounced than for adults.
Children don't have the same emotional literacy that adults do, so they're not always able to articulate that they're grieving. For kids, it might come out as anger or being upset because they don't really have the language yet to say, oh, I'm grieving.
She says rituals around remembrance may be especially helpful for children, including lighting candles and sharing stories about the departed loved one. For Georgia News Connection, I'm Brett Pivato.
President Donald Trump has made anti-immigration actions central to his administration. But as one observer notes, lies and inaccuracies about immigration obscure their contributions. Around the country, public officials and an aroused citizenry are responding to the bigotry and racism that mark Trump's policies. Now we go to global citizen commentary by the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. In the mid-19th century, an influential political party, the Know-Nothings, carried on about the dangers of immigration, not from African slaves, but from Europe. The Know-Nothings faded out with the Civil War, but they have made a comeback, the Republican Party today. When Donald Trump decided to run for president in 2015, he was advised that immigration should be his key issue. He took the advice, evidenced in his first campaign speech, in which he said, quote, "When Mexico sends its people, they're not sending their best. They're sending people that have lots of problems, and they're bringing these problems with us. They're bringing drugs. They're bringing crime. They're rapists. And some, I assume, are good people. Some." Now, a decade later, he's still at it, in baseless and vile rhetoric, and most importantly, in policy. His speech to the nation December 17 included a replica of his 2015 speech. Quote, "Our border area," referring to the Biden years, "was open, and because of this, our country was being invaded by an army of 25 million people, many who came from prisons and jails, mental institutions, and insane asylums. They were drug dealers, gang members, and even 11,888 murderers, more than 50% of whom killed more than one person. This is what the Biden administration allowed to happen to our country, and it can never be allowed to happen again. Foreign nations took advantage of us at levels never seen before. They flooded your cities and towns with illegal aliens. They decimated your hard-earned savings," and so on. Trump has called migrants animals, denounced shithole countries from which immigrants come, equated migration with an invasion, and targeted them in the war within. Never has this president offered a positive word about immigrants, choosing to ignore people who contribute to the economy and society in crucial ways, from harvesting crops to advanced science, and from Social Security to tax payments. Instead, his Department of Homeland Security boasts that it has deported over 605,000 people as of this month. the great majority of whom are law-abiding people who have over many years lived, worked, and raised their children here. Trump's first law passed in his second term, the Laken-Riley Act, mandated the detention of undocumented immigrants charged with burglary, theft, and other crimes. Since then, Trump and the Republican-dominated Congress have devoted most of their energies to vilifying, detaining, and deporting immigrants, including people legally in the U.S. and, unlike the president, not guilty of any crime. The list of administration anti-immigrant acts includes an executive order in January that paved the way for expedited mass deportations, an executive order in January, now before the Supreme Court, that seeks to end birthright citizenship for children of undocumented parents, an expansion of that order this month to deny U.S. citizenship to immigrants who have violated the law, even if they hold U.S. citizenship, a declaration of national emergency that militarized the southern border, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act in July, which provided $170 billion for immigration enforcement, travel bans and restrictions covering 39 countries, mostly in Africa and the Middle East, termination of special status for refugees from Afghanistan, Somalia, and Venezuela, a policy shift that effectively blocks appeals for asylum, new rules aimed at preventing undocumented immigrants from receiving Social Security Act benefits, and increasing identity theft prosecutions in immigrant communities, and vetting by the U.S. Customs Service to include anti-American or anti-Semitic acts as negative factors in immigration benefit requests. Vivek Ramaswamy, the Republican candidate for governor in Ohio, said last week that bigotry in his party is redefining what it means to be an American and is fueling hostility toward immigrants. Responding to those who say that one's heritage defines an American, Ramaswamy said, quote, "Our lineage is not our strength. Our true strength is what unites us across that diversity and through that lineage." His party's leaders have other ideas. They meet with neo-Nazis and white supremacists, and they speak the language of Christian nationalism. They have made racism and bigotry defining features of the American political landscape. Overt, out front, no longer on the fringe, embedded in public policy and foreign policy. The good news here is that communities across the country, with support from blue state governors and local officials, have supported their immigrant neighbors and done their best to restrain ICE and Border Patrol goons from seizing people off the streets, in courthouses, and at airports. Judges around the country have supported governors in consistently ruling against illegal deportations and National Guard deployments, though they have had to contend with a Justice Department that doesn't believe in the sanctity of legal decisions and has hurried to dispatch people to countries known for suppressing human rights. In short, the immigration issue is a battle for the soul of America. Lose it, and we lose democracy, the rule of law, and our humanity. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
With the year almost over, KBOO News poet Dan Raphael is feeling timeless.
Offshore wind turbines are a national security risk. Another Venezuelan tanker seized illegally, another dump of redacted Epstein files, two more Republican legislators say they won't run again. What a week it's been! Just 9 more days to go. January 1st, probably some laws changing, healthcare costs rising for many, otherwise just another winter day. Will there be snow for the skiers? A snowpack to alleviate summer drought? Does the year only change when the president changes? No, there's solstice. The new year is defined by the solar system, not by any religion or culture. And maybe to planet Earth, what we call a year is just a day. Patterns way beyond our concepts of week, year, or lifetime. How few Earth days ago were almost all of our ancestors not in America? Our time here is so fleeting. Why not be happy with a little less, generous as the sky, generous as soil, as accepting as sunshine and rain? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Mel Gertoff, Althea Billings, Dave Johnson, and Dan Raphael. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Edwin J. Vieira, Antonia Gonzalez, Brett Pavetto, Mark Richardson, and Eric Galatis. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Anna Wilcox. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year membership drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, where we'll be hearing a reflection on the life of KBOO volunteer and writer Judith Arcana.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Welcome to KBOO's Poetry and Everything. I'm Judith Arcana, your host. I'm going to be reading my own work, and as a really overt expression of reading my own work, I'm going to begin with some poems about my people. This first one is called Nostalgic Smoking and Drinking Poem. My family smoked and drank, talking with lit cigarettes in the corners of their mouths, squinting through rising smoke, blowing it from front room to kitchen to porch. Some of them sent quavering rings drifting down to us, children on the floor who poked fingers through the small ones, put faces forward to be framed by the big ones. No one thought it was good for them, their Camels and Luckies burning, scarring edges of card tables, but no one knew how really bad it was. Uncles and aunts, cousins in the army, down at the shop and behind the counter, grandfathers gave us empty boxes when they sucked on gold.